Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Sorry to say that we had a few technical complications on Sunday morning for the first couple of minutes of our message, and we've had a number of people ask about posting the podcast, and so what we've decided to do is to have me just go back and redo the first couple minutes of the message. So I'm going to try that this morning, and I'm in an empty sanctuary, and it doesn't have the same feel at all. But if you'll hang in there for the first couple minutes, we'll move back into the live recording a few minutes in. We started to work on this worship series that we're calling Waiting Within way back in the early fall. And when we do that, we sit down with images and with music. We sit down with a lectionary text. The lectionary is a three-year cycle that the global church uses to help root us in the stories of our tradition. And we selected the readings for this text several months ago, and Isaiah 12 was what we decided we were going to use for this morning. And sometimes when you set series in advance like that, you arrive at the text and on that Sunday morning, and you just, it's so seamless how it connects with what's happening in the world. And at other times, you select in advance, or the world church through the lectionary does that for you, and you get to the morning and you wonder, how in the world could there possibly be good news in this with what's happening in the world today? And so when the tragedies in Connecticut happened on Friday and we were holding together Isaiah 12 with what's happening, it didn't make sense about how these might connect. Isaiah 12 is a song of praise, a song of thanksgiving to God, and it sings about God's salvation and God being our salvation and the hope that we find in that, and it's about joy and shouting and singing. And there was none of that on Friday. There was none of that. A friend of mine, a colleague who's a pastor in Seattle, posted this on Facebook. His name is John, and he posted a reading from a Jewish poet several thousand years ago. And this is the poem that Jesus prayed as he died on the cross. It says, "I'm poured out like water, and all my bones are weak. My heart is like wax, melting within my breast. My strength is broken as a shard of pottery, and my mouth is dry. I am laid in the dust of death." My mouth is dry, parched. And at other moments, the tears overwhelm, the waters drown, we're overcome. There's a fine line these days between the two types of experiences that overwhelm us, that sense of being parched and that sense of being overcome with waters. John, in his Facebook post, wrote that we lament and rage because this is not the way things ought to be. This is not the way things have to be. And yet, so many of us found the courage on Sunday morning, the strength to come together, to gather in this place, in this sanctuary, to pray, to sing, and to witness against the tragic violence inflicted on children and teachers in Connecticut. And we gathered as well to hold the children in our country and beyond who are victims and survivors of violence. We mourned, and we also turned to renew our commitment to finding peace as testaments of hope and in honor of young lives lost senselessly and brutally in this season of Advent. We came together feeling dry, feeling parched, and we came together overwhelmed, drowning. We lament and we rage because this is not the way things ought to be. This is not the way things have to be. And it may feel at this moment like this could only be happening now, but then we reflect back and it only takes a few moments to remember the other tragedies that have struck our country or our world just in the last few years. And it's not unlike that space that the prophet Isaiah was writing. See, the first 39 chapters in the book of Isaiah, the people of God are living under the grip of Assyrian domination. They knew more than I can imagine of what it meant to be parched. They knew more than I can imagine of what it meant to drown. And then the last half, chapters 40 and beyond, it focuses on a time of God comforting God's people as they're returned from Babylonian exile. They are a people who knew what it was to experience the sense of parchedness and the feelings of rage and lament, the sense and the fine line between drowning in tears and feeling so dry that we cannot even find voice to speak. And yet the prophet Isaiah in this particular chapter speaks words of hope to a people who need so much to feel that sense. The prophet Isaiah speaks in this way. You'll say in that day, I'll give thanks to you, O Lord, for though you were angry with me, your anger turned away and you comforted me. Surely God is my salvation. I will trust and will not be afraid, for the Lord God is my strength and my might. God has become my salvation. With joy, you will draw water from the wells of salvation. And then it goes on. You'll say in that day, you'll find a communal voice. In the Hebrew, this is directed not just to an individual, but to an entire people. You all will say in that day, give thanks to the Lord, call on God's name, make known God's deeds among the nations, proclaim that God's name is exalted, sing praises to the Lord, for God has done gloriously. Let this be known in all of the earth. Shout aloud and sing for joy, O people of Zion, for great in your midst is the Holy One of Israel. As we gather in that space and as we try to make sense of the feelings of being both parched and overcome at the same time, I've been turning to voices, people who I know have experienced this kind of tragedy in their own lives, and they've found ways to move through that time. And so the first artist that I want to lift up this morning, and I want to play a brief clip that it was shown on MTV. This artist, his name is Lupe Fiasco, and he's a 30-year-old hip-hop artist from Chicago. Initially, in his own life, he had disdain for hip-hop and rap because of the vulgarity that it finds itself marred within so often. Yet he's been able to use hip-hop to express this radical message of justice and of possibility of new ways of being in the world. And the video that I want to share for just a moment is footage of Lupe. The first part that we'll see is him being interviewed on the streets where he grew up 6 years ago. And he holds in contrast the violence of the streets and then the hope and the possibility of his own home and the way that his mom taught him a way of life that was rooted in faith and in hope. and also in an intellectual quest for justice and for peace. And he holds that in tension with what he experienced on the streets in his own neighborhood. And he's walking around, and you'll see him talk a little bit about that life experience. And then it'll cut away to the present day, and he'll be seated on a couch, and you'll hear him. It's better to hear him in his own words. So let's listen and move into this.
Nice, kids, when they go home, it's just like being outside. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So if I can create something, a meeting place or something like that for them out here so they can have that. Because right now, they ain't got it. And it ain't no music. I can't make, ain't no song that I can make. There's no We Are the World that I'm going to make. You know what I'm saying? That's going to unify and make all this better.
Wow, man. That was, man, that brought tears to your eyes. What was it about that you know, just triggered this emotion from you? Just looking back. Man. Take your time with it, man. I think it was interesting about that piece, which you can apply to today, everything we've been talking about on the couch today. Yeah. It's kind of what we were talking about when I first met you years
ago. That's how you know that it was genuine.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we wanted to capture with Mind Block. What is it? Are those tears of joy or those tears of...
What's up? Mm. Yeah. Some of them dudes are dead.
Mm. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, the legacy, though, in a sense, I mean, if it's anything you could take away from it, the fact that you hear the legacy, the spirit still lives on in a sense because you didn't acknowledge them, you know. Is it people like that that motivate you? Oh, thank you.
Indeed.
Yeah.
You know, you got dudes, you know, Chicago, the murder capital.
Uh-huh.
You know, the dudes in that video, you know, in a prison.
Uh-huh.
A couple fed cases. Then his boss. Mm. You see people that ain't, you know, that ain't there.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, B.
Yeah.
I don't know, B is where he ends there, and you can feel the discomfort in the person who's interviewing. It's so hard to just sit in the midst of those tragic moments where we are face to face with the reality of death, the reality of violence that overwhelms our world, that overwhelms Connecticut and has overwhelmed Chicago, the streets of Chicago, the streets of Sacramento for so long. Lupe says, "This ain't how it's supposed to be. There's no song I can make, no way out of the world that I can make to make all this better. Some of those kids aren't going to make it out, and I see it everywhere. Not the way things ought to be, and it's not the way that things have to be." And this isn't a sentimental Christmas story, because the church's movement toward the mystery of Christmas has never been that. Sure, it's got twisted over the years, but in the depths of what it's always been, it hasn't been that, because pain is real, and part of waiting within the possibility of God being born means that we're waiting in the world all around us. And it's always been a mess. It's a mess for many of us in this space, and our stories may not be Lupe's, but our stories are our own. And some of us are waiting with the news that siblings have been diagnosed with illnesses that we couldn't have fathomed a few weeks ago. And some of us are waiting within relationships that are crumbling apart, and we're afraid. Some of us are waiting within unknown futures. We've sent off applications and there's just the silence that's in that space. Some of us are waiting within the heaviness of the idea of going into our first Christmas without that person that we loved so much. And some of us wait within family cycles that are so destructive, we cannot fathom ways to get beyond them, ways to get outside of them. And it's in that place, it's in that kind of hurt that the prophet Isaiah was speaking to the people to say that God is my salvation. God is my hope in the midst of all of this hurt. And yet we twist what we think God is. And so I want to take us in to who is God in our lives. Who is this God that we wait to be born? Who is this God that we wait with and we wait on? As we do that, though, I want to imagine with you all that place that the prophet Isaiah talks about, where there is no war anymore, that place where swords are turned into plowshares. Can you imagine that in your own life, in your own daily interactions, in your own work, in your own neighborhood? We gathered last night, Sarah and I did, with folks on our street, and I'm embarrassed to say it, but we've lived there for almost 3 years, for 2.5 years, and we're meeting people on our street for the very first time. And so if we're going to imagine the peaceable kingdom or the peaceable kingdom, it might actually mean meeting the folks that live right around us. And for some of us, that's going to be a place to start, and for some of us, that might be the very best that we can do. But it takes getting into our own stories and then listening to the stories of people around us. One of the people who has taught me the most about getting into our stories, our own stories, over the last week is another artist. And his name is Kanan, and he's from Somalia. And Kanan was born in the midst of war. He's either a year older or younger than I am. He was born and lived with his family there. You see an image of him here. He lived in a refugee camp for a number of years and then was taken to the U.S. and then settled in Canada. Kanan wrote an essay last week, and it was in the New York Times. And he's a poet and a storyteller, and his words are way more beautiful than mine would ever be, so I want to share some of his words. I come with all the baggage of Somalia, he says, of my grandfather's poetry, of pounding rhythms, of the war, of being an immigrant, of being an artist, of needing to explain a few things. Even in the friendliest of melodies, something in my voice stirs up a well of history, of dark history, of losses, victory. So I'm not the easiest sell to Top 40 radio. What I am is a fox who wanted to walk like a prophet and now is trying to rediscover its own stride. I may never find my old walk again, but I hope someday to see beauty in the graceless limp back toward it. So Kanan is a person who I think we can turn to in moments like this, because his own life and the songs that he sings are born out of the tragedy that so many of us have witnessed over and over, whether it's on a Facebook feed or on television for the last 72 hours. It's to people like that that I want to look to say, where is a moment of grace in any of this? And here's where it wasn't for Kanan. He sat down before he released his third album, and he sat down in Soho in New York City, and the folks from the label sat down with him. And they said something to this effect, could you do a little less Somalia and a little more suburbia? Could you do a little less like deep, raw escape, literally running from violence and from war? And could you do a little more like, I don't know, mall? Like, could you take that story and just like make it a little more surface? And I don't know what was on their hearts when they said it. I suspect that they really wanted to sell more albums. And we do the same thing with the Christmas story, right? Could you take that out? Could you cut that down? It's just some nice kids. Let's put them in sheep costumes and like, let's do it. Come on, people. That's what we do, right? That's what we do with the Christmas story. And then we wonder, why does Christianity have no relevance? My own daughter at her preschool this week, I didn't know what to do with it. I walk in and they've got this little sign-up sheet. And the sign-up sheet says this: if you have a tradition or a story from your family, we're looking at all the different holidays. And if you want to tell a story from your family or from your tradition, just let us know and we'll have them all in together. So I was like, well, that sounds good. I can do that. So I sign up and I tell them, I want to tell a story. I could tell a story about Advent. I could tell a story. I could bring in godly play stuff. I would love to sit with these little 3 and 4 year old kids and talk about the story and the mystery. And the teacher's eyes got scared. And she said, we don't tell the story. We don't do the religious parts of the holiday. What? We talk about Hanukkah, but not the religious parts of Hanukkah. I'm sorry, but if we're going to learn about Hanukkah, I want my daughter to learn about the religious parts of Hanukkah. I don't think there is any other parts of Hanukkah besides the religious parts of Hanukkah. Amen? Like, why in the world do we do this? Well, in part, we do it because we want to, like, desensitize everyone to everything, and our stories just become flat, and they become nothing. And the truth is, that's the same thing that's what's happened to our Christmas story for so long and for so many folks. And you say things like this, and people get upset because you're messing with what they've known. Christmas isn't supposed to be purple. It's supposed to be red, people. Like, that's what they say, but the church has always lived in a different calendar. It just always has. And we've lost it. And when we go looking for it, we don't know where it went, is the truth. Most of the time, I used to have notes about where I was, but I don't even know. So the children are learning the stories of our church right now, though, and all of... And I'm not saying that our children need to experience the in any way, even to process what happened on Friday. But there are developmentally appropriate ways that we can share these stories in all of their depth and all of their hurt and all of their hope with our children. Because otherwise, when they go out from this place, they have nothing to hold back onto. And that's what I want. That's what I long for. And that's what I think Kanaan longs for. And he left that meeting with the producers. He left that meeting, and this is what he wrote. It brings me to the little chat over breakfast in Soho. We talked about how to keep my new American audience growing. My lyrics should change. My label's executive said, radio programmers avoid subjects too far from fun and self-absorption. Like, so, and they do, and so do we, so do I. I avoid that. I do. We probably all do when we're honest with who we are and how we fail to live into God's love in those ways. And for the first time, he writes, I felt the affliction of success. When I walked away from the table, there were bruises on the unheard lyrics of my yet-to-be-born songs. A question had raised its hand in the quiet of my soul. What do you do after success? What do you do to keep it? In other words, I think he's saying, how do you stay true to your roots? How do you stay real with who you are and whose you are? And I think those are profound questions for followers of Jesus on this side of Christmas. We don't live in the same kind of fear that the people did in Isaiah's day as they were anticipating the birth of a Messiah. But we live in our own fears in this day. We live in a time of hurt that's not that different from back in a day. See, our Christmas Eve story has its roots in a violent and an impoverished world. Our story is a story of God coming into that mess. But hear the story again, because God comes into the mess as this crying child, born to a nobody in the middle of nowhere. That's our story. And yet, today, people live in this question of, well, if God is real, then why did God allow this to happen? And I just want to say, as clearly as I can, that's never been, nor should it ever be, the God that we've imagined as followers of Jesus. Our God didn't come into the world on the top of empire and lay down fiats to say, this is how it's going to be, folks. Our God came into the world to a young, unwed girl and then cried. And then called us to find different ways, ways to turn those swords into plowshares. And then cried those tears that some of you cried on Friday on the cross. And then our God was the first to be raised from among the dead. There's a story there that you can't get away from the violence. Many churches in our world today are reading the New Testament lectionary text from today. It's about John the Baptist, and I hope you'll read it. John the Baptist says, first he calls all of his people a brood of vipers, right? It's not like, hey, nice friends, what's going on? No, it's brood of vipers. I think that was his way of cursing at the people that he loved to get their attention. And he said, if you have two coats, give one away. If you have enough food, share some. If you're in a place of political power, don't abuse it. That's the person who was paving the way for Jesus to come into the world. And somehow our story gets all twisted and we forget. We think Bethlehem was an empire and we think that this newborn child somehow came into the world to lay things out straight for us so that it would all be okay. But our story has always been about a God who comes to be with us in that mess and to unfold in the vulnerability of a child's eyes that longs for salvation. And so when the author of Isaiah says that God is my salvation, I think that's the kind of God the author is talking about. A God that wants to be with us in the midst of that hurt and then lure us towards the beauty and justice of what could be. That's the God that's the God of our salvation. That's the God that if we're going to find a way to sing with parched voices this day, that's the kind of God that we're going to sing about. Frederick Buechner says it this way. So to wait for Christ to come in his fullness is not just a passive thing. It's not a pious and prayerful churchy thing. On the contrary, to wait for Christ to come in his fullness is above all else to act in Christ's stead as fully as we know how. To wait for Christ is as best we can to be Christ to those who need us to be Christ to them most, and to bring them the most we have of Christ's healing and hope, because unless we bring it, it may never be brought at all. And so I want to hear a contemporary voice, and it's Kanon's voice. I want to offer this to you all because I've been living in it all week, and it may not touch you, but it has me. And it's a song about his life. It's a song about his hope in the midst of hurt. And it's a song that talks about how as he's experienced this violence, he has found himself getting up off the wall, is the way he'll say it in this song. This is a man who has known the hurt that our world touched on Friday. This is a man that in his own life has experienced the loss that those parents in Connecticut have and are trying to be in right now. And this is one who has seen that God could offer salvation to that. So I want to invite us to just watch his video here.
And any man who knows a thing knows he knows not a damn thing at all. And every time I felt the hurt and I felt the giving getting me up off the wall, I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe. How did Mandela get the will to surpass the everyday when injustice had him caged and trapped in every way? How did Gandhi ever withstand the hunger strikes and all? Didn't do it to gain power or money, if I recall. It's a gift
I guess I'll pass it on. Mother thinks it'll lift the stress of Babylon. Mother knows. My mother, she suffered blows. I don't know how we survived such violent episodes. I was so worried. It hurt to see you bleed. But as soon as you came out the hospital, you gave me sweets. Yeah. They tried to take you from me, but you still only gave them some prayers and sympathy. Dear mama, you helped me write this. By showing me to give, it's priceless. And any man who knows a thing knows he knows not a damn, damn thing at all. And every time I felt the hurt and I felt the giving getting me up off the wall, I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe. All I can say is the worst is over now. We can serve the hard times, divorce, it's over now. They try to keep us out, but they doors is open now. My indie acorn is getting awards and covers now. This is K9 and still repping the S. Coming out of Mogadishu and still draped in the mess. But no matter how we strong, homie, it ain't easy coming out of where we from, homie. And it's the reason why I can never play for me. Tell them the truth is what my dead homies told me. Ooh yeah, I take inspiration from the most heinous of situations, creating medication out my own tribulations. Dear Africa, you helped me write this. By showing me to give, it's priceless. And any man who knows a thing knows he knows not a damn, damn thing at all. And every time I felt the hurt and I felt the giving getting me up off the wall, I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe. I was gonna do a third verse here, but I thought I'd just say something right quick. And it's that nothing is perfect, man. That's what the world is. All I know is I'm enjoying today, you know, cause it ain't every day that you get to give. And any man who knows a thing knows he knows not a damn, damn thing at all. And every time and I felt the giving getting me up off the wall, I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breathe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I ain't got nothing to complain about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know where I'm from,
yeah,
you know where I'm at, so
yeah.
I'm just
maybe it's one of the most radical things that people of faith have ever done and always done. And that's to rise for him out of the mess of Mogadishu and to find a song waiting within him that says, my hope is in this new life, in this new way. And I'm not going to allow the parchedness or the overcome that I feel to not let me sing about that God of love, that God of hope that I've known. I'm going to find it in myself, even though I'm parched, even though I'm overcome, to sing. And that's what the folks did in Isaiah's day, and they wrote it down in what we call chapter 12 right now, but back then they didn't write it down. It waited within the depths of their hearts, and they sang it out as a people of faith, as God's people. And so when we sing of a God of salvation in the midst of this, in the midst of this time, in the midst of destruction and violence, it's not that we say, hey, God, thanks for, in all your awesomeness, allowing this to happen. That's not how we sing of. That's not the God that we hold. We sing, though, to a God who came into the middle of a mess, cried out, and then pointed to a new way, and then called all of us to new life. And when we do that, it seems to me that we're kind of drawing a line and saying that this is where the evil is going to end and where we as God's people are going to stand together in God's grace, parched or overcome. We're going to find ways to just sing. And if you can't, maybe the person next to you can. And if they can't, maybe the person next to them can. Because some of us are parched and some of us are overcome, but all of us are God's people, and a song waits within us to be sung even in the midst of this hurt. For that's the song that our people have been singing all along. Madeline L'Engle writes that we cannot wait till the world is sane to raise our songs with joyful voice, for to share our grief, to touch our pain, Christ came with love. And so in that we rejoice, for the sun will rise. The sun will rise.
The sun will rise. The sun will rise, bringing life to the earth as it springs from the ground. The sun will rise. The sun will rise. We will cry all our tears, lay our weapons down. We will cry all our tears, lay our weapons down. The sun will rise. The sun will rise, bringing life to the earth as it springs from the ground. The sun will rise, the sun will rise. We will cry all our tears, lay our weapons down. We will cry all our tears.